fast and fine.
Oh my gosh.
It's very hot.
The hair too. Yeah. I feel it's starting to take over my brain. I think I'm atrophying from the inside out.
I know. Like, oh my God, it's so, I can't do anything. Mm-mm. I feel like lethargic.
At least you have a beach. I just have like grass.
I don't even want to tell you how long it's been since I've been to the beach.
Well, that's what happens though, is when you live there, you don't go.
I mean, exactly. You're like, oh, it's so much work. It's so much work. And then sand gets everywhere.
It's true.
And it's just like, now I have sand everywhere, no matter what you do. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I like where we are because it does keep it, you have to almost make it worth it, the like effort. Yeah. And that needs to be like holiday version of yourself. So
yeah.
Like, I also find cabining, like that's a big thing here because of the mountains, is going to a cabin that doesn't have sand, but the prep of like humans existing. No wonder,
in the mountains.
No wonder we left the woods. And now we're like,
I know.
Let's go back.
Let's pretend like we're homeless. No.
Except we have no skills. And like,
I mean, I'm still going to get you to go glamping with me at some stage, but it's going to be...
Look, I like camping. I told you this. I enjoy it. I especially enjoy me a little romance camping, Christy. We can go romance camping.
It's going to be amazing.
But
it is a lot of work, and you have to make it worth it.
Well, the last time my friends and I and Charlotte went to the mountains, we went up near Asheville, RIP, but also resurrected now.
Yeah.
And there was
to Asheville.
There were like 15 of us, and the sheer amount of just like food.
Yeah, you have to bring so much stuff. I mean, it's a lot of work, but like it's worth it. But it's not like today. I went and sat in my backyard and read a book. I did not go to the beach. You know, like it's just so much effort.
It is a lot of
work. And then you just don't. So yeah. Well, oh well.
That's okay. We're still over here enjoying springtime, which is great. Summer honestly is here.
Summer is here.
Spring is gone. Like spring has
sprung. Never knew you.
With spring
we never knew you.
We were not in storms around here. Oh my gosh, did you hear that? So we're in a really bad storm system right now.
Yes.
Up near me.
Yes.
And what else is up near me?
Mm-hmm.
D.C.
I said to one of my friends that one of the things, I was like, I saw a thing that was like lightning and thunderstorms might cancel the stupid fucking military parade. And I was like, this
let's
proves that there's a God.
That's right. Stephen Colbert said that. He's like, how bad do you have to make God for this to happen?
Also, God is like, no.
That's good theology. But also, I don't even want to call it a military parade because I don't
I don't either.
That's fair to our military. I am going to call it a dumbass parade.
It's a dumbass parade. It's a dumbass parade. That's what we're going to call it from now on.
The military has been drug into the dumbass.
Drug into the dumbassery.
Against their will, of maybe.
The whole.
I'm going to believe that.
Yeah. I'm gonna go for a wee little bit. I don't have a ton of time tomorrow, but I am going to go for a wee little bit to a protest.
Same.
Though I will tell you, given Florida governor just reminded us that it's legal to hit protesters with a car.
Oh. Protesters are just...
Protesters.
But I thought that was like a human thing, generally speaking. Like,
it's legal to hit a protester with your car. It's a law here. It's a thing.
Where do you live?
I live in hell.
I thought it was a general thing that humans were not fair game for cars.
Well, humans are fair game for cars. It's legal.
I know that's like I was under the stupid assumption.
Yeah, that we weren't
murdering people, but.
No, it was a couple of years ago, apparently, in like, it was like a reaction to, I'm assuming, the Black Lives Matter stuff, but it's a real thing here. And then like, there's been several sheriffs that have gotten on camera and said, like, if you protest, we can kill you. Like, it's real friendly here. So I am going to go. I can't go for the whole of the protest, but I am going to go, and I am going to try not to get hit by a car or shot by a sheriff, apparently.
in North Carolina, we haven't got those warnings, which yeah. I feel okay about. I don't know that it's a law here or not.
I don't think that it's a law in a lot of places.
Wow.
Yeah.
Also, I have never, I know I go on and on about like Josh Stein. He was recently on Stephen Colbert, which was awesome. Talking about our governor talking about how Trump denied further FEMA. For Western North Carolina.
Yep.
He loves
those people.
He does, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. Those rural people out there.
Real fighting for that working class. Yeah. Yep.
And so he seems just not want us to get hit by cars either.
That's nice.
But for a different reason. I'm just going to hide up here. I told you, I'm just going to hide.
Yeah, the Denver's mayor was like, please don't vandalize small businesses. And also, mm-hmm. we are not going to let the feds come in and shoot you. And I was like, that's better. That's a better thing to say to your citizens. Than
they put up on the Charlotte Observer that the place where Stewart got his citizenship examination and also sworn in later, ICE was picking up people who were trying to go through the process legally.
That
place is
they like, show up for their court dates and then ICE just takes them. Dates. It's an absolute. I mean, the Gestapo is alive and well in the United States. I mean, good. Freaking, I don't have non curse words for this conversation. So,
I know. Anyway, guys.
But here's what I'll say. Like, solidarity. No, we are here for our immigrant friends and family and everybody. And go do what you can and support however you can. And stay safe and don't get hit by cars. But
I also realize that, and this is your social justice aunties, realize that this is not a normal thing. And they're going to try to normalize it and say things like, oh, you know, they're illegal. But
they're not,
For example, The Observer, and again, I wasn't there, but The Observer was talking about these are people who are trying to go through the system.
Yes.
And they're picking them up. And they're going through the same system that my immigrant husband mm-hmm. went through just 2 years ago. And if he had gotten picked up by ICE, he's white, he's very fluent in English, as he proved in his examination. He had an English portion of the examination.
I mean, the Scottish should have to prove that.
Fair. But it was just like, if they had picked him up and just taken him, like, I would have not known what to do.
I know. Like, it's an absolute horror.
I would have, honestly, and this is the reaction you need to understand. You see all these people who are maybe getting violent with ICE people, and we are not encouraging that, but I'm telling you, if they had taken Stewart and put him in a van, I would have beat the ever-loving shit out of anyone I could have gotten my hands
absolutely on. I mean, also, like, let's be very honest,
honestly,
there's a real, the violence is instigated on their side. Like, ICE is instigating violence. You are asking people to just not fight back. Right? They're not the ones, the protesters are not the ones instigating the violence. And any violence that is coming out of the protesters is primarily in reaction to violence that's being put on them.
People are getting their families torn apart by
them. Let's just do what you can to stay as peaceful as possible. But I think there are some very unrealistic expectations for how people should react in these very extreme circumstances. Like you said, this is not normal. This is not just like an average Sunday protest. This is a crisis.
We're in a crisis
and things are very, very bad.
And our president apparently is going to do a parade like he's Chairman Mao or something.
Yeah, he's having a dictator parade for himself. And
I think the price tag on that too.
Yeah, I mean, and it's all, I mean, just it's bad. So yeah, I mean, as safe as possible, as peaceful as possible, but like also be realistic about what that looks like and don't blame the victims.
Yep.
And immigration is very costly and very hard. And you know this from experience. And you had the easiest of experiences, I think, you and
Oh yeah,
Stuart,
sure.
because
No, yeah. I mean, Stuart and I were married, and but I mean, it's still if you
you were
want to.
married and he had a good paying job here.
Oh yeah,
And he's a white
I
man
did
from
have to
South
sponsor
Africa.
him for him to come into the country, and that's another thing. You have to when you sponsor
It's
someone to come into the country because he didn't have a job. You
yeah.
have to make three times their lowest, what is it, minimum wage or lowest whatever their
Oh, whatever the
lowest
cutoff, yeah.
wage. Luckily, I was in North Carolina, so that wage is lower.
Yeah.
And luckily, I had a job at a university, which didn't pay a whole bunch, but it paid enough. So I
Yeah.
was able to sponsor him. But keep in mind, that's different. And when you see people, we are not saying people aren't acting mad or violent, but understand that, I would have done the same thing. Like I
Yeah.
would have been bashing out the windows of that place with a baseball bat if they took him.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
they would have put me in jail and maybe deported me now to
You might have been right next to, you might have
Venezuela.
been in the gulag next to him. I mean, and like I think about my great grandma and grandpa came over from Eastern Europe and never became citizens, and it was not an issue. And that was my great grandfather. I have a picture sitting on my table right here of me and my great grandma. So like, let's all stop pretending like, oh, they're illegal. Firstly, they're human. Secondly, people are doing what they can. Third, this process has only been set up for less than 100 years and has been set up in a really complicated, expensive, difficult way. And a lot of these people are fleeing horrific situations, trying to come to a better place. So let's not
So
make it
to go
worse.
through the process legally, I will tell you from our experiences, because you also have to do stuff on the your own country's end before moving over. Like he had to take a syphilis test, for instance, to prove that he didn't have syphilis,
Well, that's
which
good. That's nice for you.
guys, he doesn't, just so you know. But
Yay.
he had to go to London to do that. Like and because it had to be an American approved doctor at
Yeah.
an American embassy in London. So he had to fly to London from Scotland, stay in London, do all the we predict and the things that we can kind of add up. The process was probably about $35,000 to $40,000, and that's before he even
That's before he even got there.
moved. Like, or no, sorry, it is the whole process, including when he moved, but that's not the moving cost, is what I'm trying to say. Like, that's
Oh,
not
that doesn't cost, that's not like moving him and his stuff.
stuff.
That's just so
That's
that
just
he could
the process.
legally be in the country.
That's right. That's just the
Yeah.
process. And that
Do
was
you
during
know?
COVID,
Yeah.
which was a whole thing.
That is like, I mean, just
Right?
it's outlandish to me how people are I mean, obviously ignorant of the realities of immigration, but also like just not being able to think about like why might people have come here? How difficult might it be? How can we help them? How can and not to say like, oh, I mean, we can have a different conversation about
I was gonna say we're
borders
just,
and all that.
yeah.
But like if you want to have a conversation about that, there should be some process. It's the process we have is terrible. It's bad. It's bad. It's set up bad, and it's difficult.
And Purva, who's in the book group, I don't think you've met her yet, but she's from India and she's a medical doctor. She has a child that was born here, and her husband are from India. And he, I think, as well, is a doctor, maybe like a eye doctor or something, but he doesn't practice. He takes care of their son because she was able to get. They've been here for 11 years and
Yeah.
they're still on green cards. And like
Same, my friend, yeah, my good friend who you have met is from the, she lives here in St. Pete with me,
oh,
not with
yes.
me, but she lives here in St. Pete and she's from the Dominican Republic. Again, she is an incredibly privileged person as well because she has a PhD and she's
Oh, yes.
considered, one of those
A
like
highly skilled worker.
highly skilled worker, whatever it is that, but she's still on a green card too. And she's been in the States for, I mean, probably about 11 years as well, because she was at a postdoc in Michigan for a while before she moved here. So like, yeah, it takes forever. And like, these are people with incredible positions. Now we're talking about like people fleeing dictatorships in El Salvador or civil wars or whatever. Like,
And folks who are like,
yeah.
you don't know what it's like in other countries. I actually tried to get citizenship in Scotland.
Yep.
And it, I will say, is I'd like to say it's better, but I lived there 11 years and was a professor at Edinburgh University, and I still don't have British citizenship, and it isn't easier, but they certainly don't have the violence that we're seeing, the viciousness and the antagonism towards people who really bring our country to the place that it is, the backbone, I would say. They don't have that. So that part, the sort of insensitivity that we're showing right now, it's not to say that our process is the worst of the worst.
It's, no, it's not.
Our reactions right now.
Our reactions right now are fueled by racism and hate.
And they're not showing the American spirit that we were founded on at all.
Right.
So that's my sort of bottom line on it.
Yeah, same. I completely agree. It's not also,
fuck the Tories. That's all.
Yes. Absolutely.
You can Google that and see what I mean by that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Scotland, I think, is a lot friendlier to immigrants. And it is still complicated because I looked into it as well. And it was, honestly, I couldn't even try because I couldn't get a job that paid enough over there. And so, but I have friends who are immigrants to Scotland who are going through the process. It's complicated in a lot of places, but it doesn't mean that we have to throw rocks at people. We don't need to shoot people. We don't need to start deporting them to gulags in other countries. Like, we don't need to turn into 1933 Germany.
I'd love to see Scotland throw me out and be like, we're sending you to a prison in Portugal. I would have been like, okay.
Okay.
Where is this prison? Can you tell me more about the prison?
Is it near the beach?
Is it like a British-style prison, which I imagine is not too intense? That's not what we're saying. This is some hardcore stuff that's happening.
Yeah.
So it's good to keep up and to keep notice of that. And we fully support all those who are trying to live the American dream that we were sold. So, and yeah, just keep aware that these things that are happening, it's hard because we've been inundated with news and we've been inundated with information that is trying to normalize this and to say, oh, well, they're X, Y, and Z. So that's why this reaction is happening. I study history and I teach American history. This is unprecedented stuff. The last time we saw things like this, I would argue, is the 60s. And we all know what was happening back then. And well, hopefully we all know. And so, you know, it still almost overshadows that in a way that the shipping off people and
the shipping off of people, I think that's considerably worse. But I will say, you know what is really concerning to me?
And we have a right to protest, by the way. Just that's in the Constitution, which still matters. Yes.
This is our constitution should matter and does matter, and even if it is not being acknowledged by this administration.
Peaceful protest.
Protest is a right of everyone here. And so what concerns me, the thing that I am kind of currently extremely worried about is essentially a Kent State repetition. You know, my mom went to college in Ohio at the same time and was part of the protests that were going on at the same time as Kent State. And so I grew up.
They were protesting Vietnam, for reference.
Yeah, they were protesting Vietnam. I grew up being taught about it. I mean, as I've mentioned previously, I thought that it was the 1960s when I was growing up. And so I was very aware of these kinds of things.
The whole weird story you need to tell when we have more time.
I was a little hippie child when I was being raised, and so.
So was I, but I knew what decade it was.
I knew what decade it was. I just
knew the Beatles were dead.
I did not know that the Beatles were dead. I thought they were alive and well and still touring. Still touring.
Some of them were alive and well, but not all of them.
They were not together. But my mom had told me about Kent State, I mean, for ages, and then we went to a Kent State kind of memorial. It was a museum. It was like one of the special exhibits. And like, I could recite the names of the students who were killed for years. I mean, decades. I can still remember a few of them, but it was one of those like really shocking moments of how much the government had overstepped and gone against its 100%. Own citizens. And I'm like, that's where we're at again. And I'm just kind of waiting for the new names, you know, and it's really.
These students were just protesting Vietnam. And actually what's interesting is Nixon, after the Kent State massacre, which it was, I think it was the National Guard that was called in, but it was police at the very least. And they shot.
It was the National Guard.
They shot students who were protesting. And then some students died that were just walking the class. They weren't even in the protest.
They weren't. Yeah.
There was like a guy that was like a military guy that was just like walking to class. And Nixon, either the day after or a couple days after, has a press conference about it because they forced him to. And he is really trying to create a divide. He calls them hippies, the hippies and the, you know, those deviant hippies and all that. And, you know, patriots and the people who support the troops. And if you watch this, I'll post a little bit of it on Instagram because you need to see that history is repeating itself here.
Yeah. You
know, this is not he goes and he doesn't apologize.
You should,
like when you watch the video, he's not apologizing. He's saying, well, you know, they did X, Y, and Z. And so that's what happened. And you guys understand because they're just these hippies and, you know, they're draft dodgers. They've done all this stuff. And so he's trying to create this world where it diminishes the victims to the point where the American government was justified in what they did. And these people who support him are like, well, we're just supporting the troops. Supporting the troops should never be an excuse for murdering people. And that's what happened. Because you know from this podcast that Christy and I have military families and we support the troops. And if anything, I want the troops to not be kids having to go fight a war. That
I was going to say, supporting the troops and just blindly agreeing to any war or any action that the troops are called to do are two different things. Like, you can support the troops all day long and still protest the Vietnam War or the Iraq War or, you know, let's just start listing off the litany of wars we've been in.
My grandfathers would be horrified. If they had seen this military parade, the guy who went to Korea and the guy who went to World War II would have been horrified by this.
Horrified, yeah. Like, I know, my grandpa, both of them, rolling in their graves.
Rolling. Like, and so that's what is not normal. This is not, and any sort of blanket they try to use to cover this as being normal, is fear. They're fearful of this person who is finite and who will go. And what we will have is another, the way that we talk about the Kent State Massacre and we talk about it in those words and we teach it history, you are now living that history.
Yep.
And one day generations will look back and be like, what was it that led these people to think that it's okay? And throughout history, I've seen through teaching it is that it's, tired, people get tired of the news, they get tired, they just get complacent and they say, well, this is okay. They get in their bubbles and they get self-justified, and it's only when people, sadly, it's only when it's over sometimes and people look back, they're like, oh, that was a massacre.
It's that quote, one day when all of this is over, everyone will look back and say, we always knew this was wrong. And like,
and that that's
what we do with everything. I mean, like right now, if you ask 90% of US citizens, I'm making that stat up, but like it's a large majority, they'll say, yeah, Vietnam was not a war we should have fought. If you ask, you know, they'll say, yeah, the Holocaust was terrible. But when in that time period, or like currently we have a day for Martin Luther King Jr., but when he was killed, he did not have a majority of support by white people. So like, yeah, someday we're all going to look back on this, but try to be on the right side.
Yep.
When it's happening, you know.
And now Veterans Day is apparently World War One Victory Day.
Oh.
That was, I saw that video.
Okay.
I'll verify if that's true or not. Well, he's trying to make it that. Not that it is that, but, you know, anyway. So, Christy and I are starting a summer series because we needed something else, because this is going to tear us apart, our heart and our soul. Yep. And so our summer series is that we are going to do a series of papers that we submitted to various things that didn't, that didn't get accepted.
Yep.
And that we're going to...
We're going to call it the Summer of Rejection.
Christy on her video message to me said, we're going to reclaim the narrative.
We're taking back the power.
I'm taking back the power. That's what she said. That's taking back the power. So screw all of you people who said we should, which honestly, some of the papers.
Some of them are probably not amazing, but you know what? I was excited about all of them.
I know. The first one we're going to do is my submissions to AAR. This is going to be in 2 weeks' time, I guess. Or is it next?
I don't know. I think it's next week. Yeah. We have to look at the calendar.
Okay, whatever.
I don't know what today is. Yeah.
Soon, though. Well, the next thing.
And, the next episode, yeah.
This was AAR this year in Boston.
The fancy one in Boston with all the brown shoes. Papers.
One was on the Rocky Horror Picture Show, uh-huh. which I was very excited about, which didn't get accepted. Same. And one that was called Fuck Carl Burt, which weirdly... Weirdly,
the paper titled Fuck Carl Bart did not get accepted. That one got it was a shocker.
So fast. That one was like days. I think the Rocky Horror people are like, maybe.
Maybe.
So we're going to, I'll talk about those on the episode. We're also going to have, in the midst of this series, we're going to have Josh Patterson of Rethinking Faith and Taylor of Thomas. Thank you. I didn't say Tillich. Of Tillich
today. You almost did.
I kept it to myself. She's Taylor Tillich in my phone. So we are in a group chat with them, which is a fun place to talk. And we are going to talk about podcasting and theological podcasting and pros and cons. And we're probably going to drink some wine and just chat to them. Oops, but the rest of the series is going to be about these papers that we, you know.
Yeah,
should have gotten accepted.
I can't tell you how excited I am about it, because you know it's hard, because you get the call for papers or call for proposals for whatever, because like one of the ones that we're gonna do is my chapter on Lost, that's
Lost
is lost. It's lost to the world. So yeah, there's just, it's gonna be these things that we saw proposals for, submitted them, and got rejected. And like, to be fair,
they're just lost in the ether.
Lost in the ether, like my chapter.
Christy and I have both written stuff that just...
It's just never, like, the publishing just never right ended now. Up happening or whatever.
It's sitting on someone's hard drive somewhere.
Yeah, it's just lost to the cloud up in the sky, the great floating cloud in the sky. But you know, we get excited about some of these. Some of them, to be fair, are like, it's understandable why they didn't get accepted. You know, like I remember a couple of years ago, I submitted a proposal to AAR that, like, looking back, I was like, okay, I can get, but I still was excited about it, because you know, we're who we are. And so we're like, yeah, here's an idea. This will be fun. And then it just doesn't come to fruition. And then you have all these, like, you know, poor rejected ideas, like at a graveyard or something. Graveyard of rejection.
I got a grant from the Scottish government, like a pretty substantial grant, to do work in Scottish schools and to produce stuff for them practically, but also to produce an article on sectarianism in Scotland. It is probably one of the best things I've ever written. It is qualitative research 101. It has stats in it, and it has never been published because no one would touch it.
Oh my goodness. See, it's so sad, and it's so frustrating, because you do this thing and you do put a little piece of your heart into it, you know, and then it's just not done. It's gone. And like, I know some people like try submitting it stuff multiple times. No, that's not true. The Buffy paper that I gave at AAR, I did submit that one in various places until it finally got accepted, because I was
once. Like, I still have hope that one day someone will see that research on sectarianism in Scotland, because it's still there.
I hope so. Yeah. Either way, we're gonna take back the power, and y'all are gonna hear about it.
So egotistical. We're taking back the power. It's like people did famously, this is famous at least for me, is, well, at Edinburgh University, is I had never gotten a paper accepted to AAR, and as of now I've only gotten one accepted to the Gay Men and Religion. Shout out to my Gay Men and Religion.
It was a great panel too. I was there.
It was great. I had a great time, and it was exactly the perfect place for me. But yes. when I was in Edinburgh, I remember at the time I was head of theology and ethics, and a lot of people at Edinburgh were on the program units, which are these different little subject areas at AR. And so we did a test because I was like, well, let's test it. And I'm not going to call out who it was, but it was a certain someone that Christy knows, and it was a certain panel someone knows. And this person looked at my proposal, edited the proposal, and then I submitted the proposal. It still got rejected.
It got rejected.
By the guy that was in charge. Like, he said yes, and everyone else said no. I had to gender him, but hey, it's Edinburgh. Most people are men anyway, so it's fine.
Yeah.
But it was so funny, because I was like, what in the world do I need to do to make this
right?
For year after year, and when I would get people to look at stuff, and it was so funny. It was probably a pure decade I got nothing accepted. And then I got the one accepted, like, 2 years ago to the Gay Men and Religion stuff.
Yeah, it was,
and
San Antonio. It was great.
And then this year I went back to being an asshole, and I think that shows that maybe what happened. But anyway, we're going to talk about the process too, and how it is, you know, not everything is inherently biased. Like, there are some blind stuff, and some panels you may not get on because people knew what they wanted beforehand. But, you know, I do think there is some that do it fairly, and I plug for, speaking of AR Southeast, I put up some stuff about that.
Yes.
That is blind because I'm in charge of it. So I make it blind. The people who look at your papers cannot see your name. So do submit to that AR Southeast is on the internet. And you don't have to be from the Southeast region. Just know that the conference will be held in the Southeast.
Do you know where it is?
I sure do. It's Furman University, which is in Greenville, South Carolina, which is actually a pretty cool place. As it goes,
is that where?
That's
is
where that you see Blink.
I love Greenville.
Greenville's cool.
It's so cool. I'm there.
It's
coming.
It's a walking town.
It's such a cute town. Apparently, there's a waterfall. We heard a lot about that waterfall. I didn't go see it because I've seen a lot of waterfalls in my day. But
no, it's a good time. Like,
it's a good time.
It's over spring break every year, and it's not everyone's spring break, but they try to either do it. It's on the weekend. So it's
on the weekends. Yeah. So it's not like it's Tuesday.
That bridges the two commonly used spring breaks. Yeah. So that one I can tell you is blind because I get all the paper.
Well, and two, I think to be fair, most of them are blind. It's just, I think sometimes you've got a kind of goal in mind and you can write proposal, like the call for proposals in a certain way that you're going to end up with a theme you know, and if you're not in line with that theme completely or whatever, or some of them just get, I saw on Blue Sky one day when AAR was doing the acceptances, right? Like stuff was getting accepted. Somebody on one of those panels posted, he had like 100+ proposals for one panel, and you could get 4 people.
That's right.
Maybe 5 people on. So sometimes it's just really like there are just so many, and you know,
I've applied to the practical theology unit most years.
Yeah.
And they know who I am. I sit in the back at their panel.
Leah's getting text messages, everybody. She looks shocked.
I don't think that's right. I just got texted. Anyway, it's the least sexy text as well. It probably looked like that. But anyway, so I applied all the time to practical theology. I used to sit in the back with like all the Aberdeen PT people, like Katie Cross and Leon and John Swinton. And I just sit there and we were like, well, another year, none of us are getting on here.
Yeah. I mean, I used to submit to the systematic theology panel, and then I realized that
that's probably even worse.
Ours I'm not enough of a brown shoe for that nonsense. No. Like I can try, but
I'm not Scandinavian enough for the
press. I'm just inherently not quite stuffy.
Well, and I think too, we joke about it, but, and I joked about the Scandinavian thing, but it is also like, you have to see. So like when I say I sit at the back with the Aberdeen people, it's because, and the Glasgow people, is that I was taught practical theology in Scotland, which is a different flair than some other, even American practical theologians. And so when you look and you look at the panel, you have to understand that PT in Scandinavia was taught in a different way, and mm-hmm. they have different focuses yeah. and foci and yep. all this sort of stuff. And like, so when they read your paper, it might seem like an alien thing to them. And that's not, yeah. it is.
Bi- or it just might not even be, like I said, it might just not be what they're looking for in that time.
100%. 100%.
And so this is, I think this is why it doesn't feel like, for me, it never feels like my paper has been rejected because it was just bad. Right. It always, there's always a kind of sense like it was rejected for reasons, and they might be good reasons, they might be bad reasons, whatever. But it doesn't mean that I'm like, oh, okay, well, that idea was just bad, I'll just move on from it. I'm always just a little bit like, oh no, that was still a good idea. Maybe that's not where it needed to go. Maybe those aren't the people who want to listen to it, but it's still a good idea. It should be out of my head. It should be out in the world somewhere. Which is why we thought that this was, I mean, we get to talk about whatever we want to talk about because this is our podcast.
But also now that we're down the road a bit, and, you know, I would never in my first year have submitted a paper called Fuck Crawford.
No, probably not. But like, yeah, it just feels like this is a good time for us to revisit some of those. And like, some of them may see the light of day somewhere else eventually. You never know. But for now, we're going to give them to you guys. And so, yeah, so Leah's going to kick us off with her AAR. I think we're going to start with Fuck Karl Barth. And we're going to do a series, and it's going to go for the summer. So
and it's also even though, too, if you're in academia and you're applying for jobs, just know that a lot of the same stuff applies to jobs.
Oh, 100%.
I have been rejected from countless jobs.
Countless. Countless. And it's usually because there are 200 applications.
Yeah, for reasons yeah. that sometimes are more valid than others. But in yeah. the end, it's that you didn't hit the sweet spot that yep. someone, and that's kind of the reason. But, and also we want our papers to see the light of the world. And so yep. you all are going to get to hear all about why.
We want to resurrect this graveyard of ideas. So
you get to hear about my Scottish studies.
It's going to be great because like Leah's going to tell us why Fuck Karl Barth, and then I get to respond.
Yeah, so it's like we're giving our
paper. So it's like we're giving, it's going to be more fun than if you guys went to a conference, but it's also going to give you a little flavor of a conference. So
yeah, absolutely.
That's going to be a good time. But
well, that's our trailer. So
yeah, this is just a exciting cliffhanger for you.
Yeah, so we love you guys. Welcome to our summer series, and yeah. we'll see you
soon. Yep. All right. Bye.